into Southeastern Carolines, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I am Caroline Fenton, getting you set for the SEC slate of games of the day, like I do every Saturday. And of course, just like I am every Saturday, I am live here at 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. It is my absolute favorite place to come out and watch a game. Grab some pizza, grab some beer. They've got thick crust pizza, thin crust pizza. They've also got a bunch of Chicago favorites. They've got Italian beef sandwiches. They've got really good soft pretzels. That's one of my favorite appetizers here. Plus, they've got a long list of local beers on taps. You can come hang out, watch the games, meet your friends here. One of my favorite places in town. And of course, all of their ingredients are fresh. All of their recipes are passed down from generation to generation. And the people here are just wonderful. So come hang out at 312 Pizza Company in Germantown, the official home of Southeastern Carolines, and of course, one of my favorite places to hang out in town. But let's get into it. Kind of an underwhelming slate of games this week. We've had a couple of really good weeks the past couple of weeks, and I think this is kind of a slower week for a lot of teams in the SEC, at least, heading into rivalry week next week. But we've got Georgia, Kentucky. We've got Tennessee on the road at South Carolina. We've got Florida, Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, good for Vanderbilt, getting their first SEC win against Kentucky last week. The first SEC win since 2019. Good for Clark Lee. Good for this Vanderbilt football program. It was an exciting win for them, and I'm happy for Vanderbilt. So can they do it twice in a row? Can they get two SEC wins this year? We'll find out today against Florida. And of course, I will have my official picks, my betting picks of the day, what I think that you should put your money on, what I'm putting my money on. I'll do that at the end of the show. But first, I want to touch on some news that was not necessarily announced or new this week, but it was brought to the front of the news cycle yet again. And this was reported that SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey says that he is, quote, leaning heavily toward getting rid of divisions altogether. No SEC divisions, just one SEC conference, and operating under no divisions. Now, I say this isn't new because this was something that was brought up in the SEC spring meetings in Destin just a few months ago. But it was also brought up as more so throwing ideas around. You know, once Texas and Oklahoma join in 2025, you know, the divisions just aren't going to work anymore. So what was the next plan? And getting rid of divisions altogether was part of that plan, was one of the ideas that was thrown out there. Now, the other possibility that was thrown out there, there were so many ideas thrown at the wall, but the other one that caught a lot of traction was the pod system, where they would get rid of divisions, and rather there would be four-team pods. Again, this is when Texas and Oklahoma joined the SEC, so the SEC would be 16 teams with the division, with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma. So what that would look like is each team has three permanent rivals that they play every year, and then the remaining games on their schedule, the conference games, would be rotated throughout different pods that each team would play, you know, another team from other pods, and that would fill in the rest of the SEC schedule. But now it's looking, the most recent developments have been that Greg Sankey is, quote, leaning heavily toward getting rid of divisions altogether. Now, I've mixed feelings about this, and we'll get your thoughts on this as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you have a thought on this. But I'll start off with what I do like. I do like more schedule variety. One thing that I dislike about the division setup where it is right now is whatever division that your team is in, your SEC team that you're a fan of is in, you don't play the other division very frequently. You have your one permanent rival in each division, which I think is a really fun shakeup throughout the season and a fun way to bring in rivalries. And then you only have one game a year where you play a team in the other division. And I don't like that. I like more teams. I like more variety. I like teams being able to face each other more. I mean, I look at Georgia and Texas A&M. Georgia and Texas A&M have played one time since A&M joined the SEC 10 years ago. And it took 7 years for Georgia and A&M to play each other to begin with. They played for the first time in 2019 against Texas A&M, and Missouri joined the SEC in 2012. Georgia and A&M met for the first time in 2019, and they haven't met each other since. That's a problem. You cannot have two teams within the same conference, and they only have played each other once in the last 10 years. That's a problem. I like the variety there. I like the fact that my team in the SEC West is going to be able to play Tennessee and Georgia and Kentucky and South Carolina more frequently. I like that. That's where new rivalries are born. That's where you get a little bit more of a shakeup within the division, within the conference rather, and I like that. The second thing that I like about this, and this is what I think the real motivating factor is behind getting rid of divisions, and I don't think that it's a coincidence that it's happening this year at this time. And that's a more fair SEC championship. I know that there are a lot of Tennessee fans out there that are just livid at the fact that LSU is playing and competing for an SEC championship whenever Tennessee beat them head to head and Tennessee has a better record. I understand your frustration there. However, that is not the first time that that's ever happened. The SEC East, at least in recent history, I would even go as far as to say the last 10 years, the SEC East has been a much less competitive division than the SEC West. The SEC West, you got Alabama, you got LSU, you got Auburn, you got, Mississippi State, you got Ole Miss, you've got teams, really talented teams, really good teams. And the SEC West, I feel confident in saying, at least in recent history, is the most competitive and the most difficult division and the most difficult conference to compete in all of college sports. So I get it. I understand Tennessee fans' frustration that we should be competing for a conference championship because Tennessee fans feel that they are one of the two best teams in the conference. I hear you. I know Tennessee fans. I get it. It's frustrating. And that is exactly why this new proposal for getting rid of divisions and just being one big conference, that's the motivating factor behind that. Because the SEC doesn't want to be in a situation like this where Tennessee and Georgia are the top two teams in the conference and have the two best records in the conference. And there's another team with two losses on their schedule on the other side of the division that's going to be competing for an SEC championship. And then you add in the second layer of college football playoff implications, where there is a possibility where Tennessee could be left out of the college football playoff, depending on how the SEC championship game shakes out. Whether you believe it or not, whether you like it or not, it is a legitimate possibility. And it is something that we can have a serious conversation about. If LSU wins out, and if LSU beats Georgia in the SEC championship game, that LSU could get into the college football playoff over Tennessee. Now, do I think that LSU is going to beat Georgia? No, I don't. I think Georgia is just that good. Do I think that LSU would get in over Tennessee if LSU won the SEC championship game and they were the SEC champion? I think there's a possibility. And I know that there are people, even people on this station, that vehemently disagree with that, even though we have consulted with Heather Dinich and Trevor Maddich and people who are very in tune with the College Football Playoff Committee, that is a serious possibility. And I understand how unfair that is. I get it. I understand that. And that's what I think the SEC is trying to avoid moving forward, is making sure that the best teams in the conference can compete for an SEC title and that it's a fair shot there. And I really, it's kind of surprising to me that this doesn't happen more often, but it does happen. I look at 2015, Florida was the representative in the SEC East for the SEC championship game. Florida was 10-2. Well, Ole Miss was also 10-2. I look at 2016 Florida represented the SEC East again in the SEC championship, and they had 8 wins. Well, Auburn and LSU, who were both 2-3 in the SEC West, also had 8 wins. So this has happened before, but I don't think it's been as obvious as it is this year between Tennessee and LSU, considering Tennessee beat LSU head to head in their house, and Tennessee had a better record, rather. I understand that. I get that. I understand Tennessee fans' frustration. And that is the motivating factor b behind getting rid of two divisions and just being in the SEC moving forward. So that's what I do like about it is more schedule variety. You're going to see teams across the conference play other teams more frequently. I like that. I want the opportunity to see, Georgia and A&M, the example that I used earlier. I want to see that more often. I don't want to see that once every 10 years. And also a more fair shake at the SEC championship, and to make sure that you have the two best teams in the conference competing for the conference championship, because that's what makes sense, right? Like, that's what it should be. But here's what I don't like about Greg Sankey's proposal of abandoning divisions. I don't want really good rivalries to be a memory of the past. And when you abandon divisions, it is more than likely that you are going to lose a lot of historic traditions and historic rivalries moving to no divisions. I personally cannot imagine a world without an Egg Bowl. I can't imagine being a college football fan and not having the privilege of watching the Iron Bowl every year. And you could say, well, cool, they'll probably maintain those rivalries because those are the rivalry week games, and Florida still plays Florida State and Georgia plays Georgia Tech, and I hear you. But there are rivalries that will undoubtedly be left behind. I look at, will Georgia Florida still be a rivalry every year? Tennessee Alabama, is that going to be a game that's prioritized every year? Even Tennessee Vanderbilt. I understand that if you're a Tennessee fan listening, you're thinking, well, who cares about that game? Well, Vanderbilt fans care. And that's a rivalry that has gone back for so many years. And that's a rivalry that's important within the state of Tennessee. And I don't want to see that go away. There are Auburn, Georgia, the oldest rivalry in college football. I don't want to see that go away. And you could say, okay, well, I'm sure that they'll account for all of those rivalries. One, there's no way to account for all of the rivalries. And two, there's no guarantee that that'll happen. Because if you accommodate for all of those rivalries, well, then you're probably just falling back into a divisional schedule anyway. If you make sure that all of the rivalries are accounted for, even the rivalries that maybe from the outside looking in, you might not even think are rivalries. Tennessee, Kentucky, LSU, Florida. Those aren't the rivalries that you see on Rivalry Week, but there's a deep-seated tradition between those two matchups. So that's what I don't like about abandoning divisions, is the undoubtedly obvious abandoning of really good rivalries that I look forward to year in and year out. So the questions that I have about this potential change moving forward within the conference, I'm for the change. I like the change. I am somebody who absolutely despises change, but I don't hate this. But I do have a couple questions. One, what's the tiebreaker going to be for the SEC championship game? It's not a crazy possibility that there could be three teams in the SEC that end up 10 and 2, and all three could have a legitimate possibility at getting to the SEC championship game. And what if those teams don't play head to head throughout the season? You're not going to have a tiebreaker game. Are you going to have an SEC championship game committee, like the college football playoff committee, that decides who are the best two teams in the conference? And I don't know. I don't know what the likelihood is of two SEC, or three maybe SEC teams going undefeated. I don't even know if mathematically if that's possible. Maybe I should have probably done that. But what are the odds that three SEC teams go lossless throughout the season? You're gonna leave an undefeated team out of the conference championship? So that's what I do wonder is how do they plan to attack tiebreakers moving forward? And the second question I have is how often will teams play one another? Because like I mentioned, rivalries will undoubtedly be abandoned, and maybe that's just the way that college football happens. That's the way it shakes. Conference realignment, you lose rivalries within the process. I get that. But let me just choose Auburn, Georgia, for example. Great rivalry, historic rivalry. Maybe they don't play every year anymore. Well, how often will they get to play one another? If I'm going to say that one of the things that I do like about the schedule is schedule variety, is there going to be home and homes? How frequently will teams actually get to play each other? How much of a schedule variety will they really start to see shake out? Will it be fair? Will it get to the point where there are some teams that are playing Alabama, more frequently than others? How does the market, quote unquote, correct itself? And those are all questions that I'm sure the SEC and Greg Sankey will all shake out. But as this new approach to the SEC or this new structure of the SEC will start to shake out. And when Greg Sankey says he's leaning heavily toward getting rid of divisions, what he's telling you is he's getting rid of divisions. Those are the questions that I have as we kind of navigate through this new SEC that I believe will inevitably happen, especially once Texas and Oklahoma join the Southeastern Conference. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get your calls, your texts on that. But coming up next, I was talking a lot about some movement within the SEC and the schedule itself. Is there even more movement happening with one individual within the conference? We'll get into that coming up next at Southeastern Carolinas. I'm Caroline Fenton. It's 125-1063 The Game. Southeastern Carolines 1025-1063 The Game. So we could potentially see some pretty big changes happening within the Southeastern Conference. At least that's what Greg Sankey is leading on to. And I think one lesson that we have learned through this entire process of conference realignment, it's that when Greg Sankey or some of the people at the top say something might happen, it's gonna happen. Whenever there is rumors, air quotes, of Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, it means Texas and Oklahoma are joining the SEC. So we have those kinds of changes to look forward to in the future of getting rid of divisions and the SEC just operating under one big old happy family of a conference. But there might be another big change happening in the SEC, but it doesn't involve divisions. And it doesn't involve new teams joining the SEC. It doesn't even involve a team, really. It just involves one person. At least that's a change that is highly anticipated by many. But it's not a change that I buy, necessarily. That change involving that one person is Lane Kiffin potentially leaving Ole Miss to fill the head coaching job at Auburn. Now, this has been easily the most highly publicized possibility of Auburn's next hire. This has been the most talked about candidate to go to Auburn is Lane Kiffin. Now, I say I don't really buy it because I really don't. I don't buy that Lane Kiffin is going to go to Auburn. Because I think that he would want a few different things. First and foremost, money, obviously. Of course he'd want money. That's what any coach would leave for another program for, is money. Duh. But what we don't talk about enough is how much money Lane Kiffin is making at Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin is the 11th highest paid college football coach this season. He makes $7.25 million a year. To put that into perspective, Jimbo Fisher makes $7.5 million a year. We always talk about how much money Jimbo Fisher is making. We always talk about that massive contract that he was signed to at Texas A&M. But Lane Kiffin is making just slightly below that. But we don't talk about how much money he makes at Ole Miss. But what he's making at Ole Miss is what the market was at the time. But now you look at some of the massive contracts that have been signed since then. I look at Mel Tucker at Michigan State, making $10 million a year. I look at Brian Kelly at LSU. He also is making $10 million a year. So the coaching market has only gone up and up and up. And if Lane Kiffin does decide to make a move to Auburn, I can only believe that it would be because of a massive contract like what Brian Kelly got, like what Mel Tucker got, probably in the high nines, 10 area. That's what Lane Kiffin would leave for. But But I also can't imagine that Ole Miss wouldn't be willing to throw that kind of money at Lane Kiffin. If you look at the number of games that Lane Kiffin's been able to win, how relevant Ole Miss's football program has been under Lane Kiffin, I don't think Ole Miss is going to give up on him or is going to let him go without a fight. You can only imagine that Ole Miss would be willing to match whatever Auburn would be willing to offer. But if they're not, then maybe Lane Kiffin would jump ship and go to Auburn for the money. But I think it's beyond just the money. I think the second thing that he would want is NIL resources. Lane Kiffin has been incredibly outspoken, which, shocker, Lane Kiffin being outspoken. Crazy, am I right? No, but he has been incredibly outspoken about how he feels like Ole Miss is at an inherent disadvantage within the NIL space. Considering Ole Miss has a much smaller alumni network compared to maybe some other schools in the SEC, most notably Texas A&M, because Texas A&M has a massive enrollment. Ole Miss has the second smallest enrollment in the SEC, only larger than Vanderbilt. So they don't have the alumni network presence that some other schools in the SEC may have. And they also don't have the amount of money to contribute to NIL that maybe some other alumni networks are giving to their programs. Also, I look at Texas A&M and some of the massive NIL deals that they've signed. I look at Tennessee and their $8 million quarterback that they have coming in next year. I mean, I could name off so many players and recruits getting just massive amounts of money in the NIL space across the entire SEC. And Ole Miss just doesn't have that same kind of alumni network, or they don't have the same kind of resources. So you could look at Auburn and say they would have those resources. They would have that money. Maybe not A&M money. They ain't got oil money, but it would be an increase of resources and money than what he's getting at Ole Miss. So I understand that. I also think Lane Kiffin wants to go where he can win a championship. And I don't know if he believes that you can win a national title at Ole Miss. I think you've kind of seen that this season, is even when Ole Miss was undefeated and at the top of the college football world, when they were a top 10 team in the country, they still couldn't compete with Alabama and LSU and teams in the SEC West that have traditionally been bigger football powerhouses, that have more resources, that have more money to put into the football program and now into NIL. Auburn is one of those schools, like an LSU, like an Alabama, that has plenty of money and resources and investment into the football program. Where Auburn is the kind of school where Lane Kiffin could see himself winning a national title. And if he decided to do that, he looked at the current situation that he has at Ole Miss, which is a great gig, let me add. I mean, so much buy-in from that fan base. He's making a bunch of money. I almost just said the F word there. Oops. He's making a bunch of money. It's not a bad gig that he has at Ole Miss. And you could look at, Ole Miss to Auburn, maybe not necessarily being a lateral move, but I don't think it's necessarily a massive step up that Lane Kiffin is just starved to take at this point. But I wouldn't blame Lane Kiffin if he got more money to go to a place that has more resources and has at least a more clear path or a more established history of winning championships. I wouldn't blame it. But I said at the beginning of the segment that I don't buy it. And I don't buy it for one reason. Nick Saban is not going to be coaching football forever. As much as it might feel like Nick Saban is gonna be around forever, as much as it might feel like Nick Saban is going to be winning championships at Alabama forever, because it feels like he's already been doing it forever, Nick Saban's not gonna be coaching at the University of Alabama forever. In my opinion, Lane Kiffin is the heir apparent at the University of Alabama. Lane Kiffin has been there before. Lane Kiffin was the offensive coordinator at Alabama just a few short years ago. Lane Kiffin understands the program. Lane Kiffin is like a Nick Saban apprentice, that Lane Kiffin spent enough time around Nick Saban that he's been able to pick up on the things that makes Nick Saban so great, and the things that Nick Saban does that makes that program so great. I feel like with football programs like Alabama, the hires that they want to make are from somebody that knows the program, that knows the ins and outs of it, that can be the most seamless transition of power possible. Because I've always said, I do not envy whatever coach takes that job once Nick Saban inevitably retires. Once Nick Saban steps away from college football, I don't want to be the one that takes that job. Yeah, pretty massive shoes to fill there. But to me, whenever that day does come, whenever Nick Saban does want to step away from football, Lane Kiffin, in my opinion, it just makes sense. Lane Kiffin has proved he can win. He can win games now. He can recruit, absolutely. And he's also a Nick Saban apprentice. And I think that's what Alabama wants, right? If you have the greatest coach of all time stepping away from your program, don't you want a little bit of that to continue? Don't you think a little bit of Nick Saban probably lives inside of Lane Kiffin? And that's what Alabama would want. A little bit of Nick Saban to carry on the tradition and to carry on the legacy that Nick Saban left. And I don't know when that day will come. I don't know if that's in 5 years. I don't know if that's in 10 years. I don't know if that's in 20 years when Nick Saban is being rolled around in a wheelchair on the sidelines and he's still winning championships by the time I'm old and gray. Maybe that's the case, and Lane Kiffin has another stop or multiple stops between now and then if he does or does not take over the head job at Alabama. Going to Auburn doesn't disqualify Nick Saban from getting the job at Alabama, but I don't know of any coaches in history who have coached at three SEC programs, much less four. I mean, we've seen two before. We've seen, a coach go from one SEC program to another SEC program. That's not uncommon. But if Auburn, if Lane Kiffin, hard to get out, Lane Kiffin does go to Auburn, that would be his third SEC stop and throughout his career, Tennessee, Ole Miss, and Auburn. And then if he goes to Alabama, that's four. I don't know if that turns away a potential athletic director from hiring Lane Kiffin. I don't know if hiring from Auburn would be a little bit of a turnoff for whatever athletic director is looking for Nick Saban's replacement. But what I do know is Lane Kiffin has a pretty solid gig as it is right now. Lane Kiffin's winning games. Lane Kiffin is making money. And Lane Kiffin would be a top candidate to fill any head coaching position in college football. So why couldn't Alabama be one of them? Maybe not this year, maybe not the next, maybe not even the following year. But Nick Saban, you can't tell me that if Nick Saban stepped away today, that Lane Kiffin wouldn't be the first name on their radar, as it should be. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get your thoughts on that. Who do you think should be the next coach at Auburn? And I guess the more important question, who will the next coach at Auburn be? Because their list of potential candidates, I'll tell you what, not that intimidating if you are a fan of a team that plays Auburn year in and year out. Dave Clawson, Matt Rhule, Hugh Freeze, Sonny Dykes, all good coaches. None of them are home run hires. Lane Kiffin, now that's a home run hire. But coming up next, we'll get into the games of the week and my picks of the week, what I'm going to put my money on. Southeastern Carolinas, 1025, 1063, the game. Let's get into it, the good stuff, the games of the week, and where I am putting my money on the sports books for the SEC slate of the day. I'm looking at what I think is probably the biggest game of the day. It's the CBS 230 game for a pretty unimpressive slate of SEC games, but Georgia, Kentucky. And these two teams are in very, very drastically different places so far in the season because Georgia is the consensus number one team in the country. Georgia has looked like the most dominant team in the country. I think Georgia is the best team in the country. On the other hand, Kentucky just lost to Vanderbilt. So there you go. But what do I think is going to end up happening here? I'm taking Georgia to cover the 22 and a half. I don't like that spread because I feel like Kirby this season has been one to kind of, no pun intended, call the dogs off and not over exacerbate themselves. So I wouldn't be surprised if they go up by like three touchdowns and they kind of call it there. So that extra 1.5, 2 point swing doesn't make me feel super comfortable, but I do think that Georgia's going to be able to put up a bunch of points on Kentucky because Georgia's offense is a top five offense in college football, but their defense isn't allowing anything against opposing offenses. I mean, I think we saw it against Tennessee, you know, one of the most electric, if not the most electric offense in college football right now. And Georgia was able to limit Tennessee to one single touchdown that came in garbage time late in the fourth quarter. This Georgia defense is legit. No opponent has scored more than 22 points against Georgia, and Georgia's giving up an average of 11 points per game. So, this Georgia defense, I don't think is going to do Kentucky any favors. Plus, Kentucky's offense has been struggling mightily. I mean, you're going to see Kentucky lean on Chris Rodriguez, their running back, a lot in this game, as they should. But this Kentucky offensive line hasn't been able to protect Will Levis at all this season. So I think this is going to be a really interesting matchup between Kentucky's offensive line and Georgia's defensive front. Because as much as I brag on Georgia's defense, they've only recorded 17 sacks on the season so far. That is tied for third worst in the SEC, only in front of South Carolina and Kentucky that have 16 and 15 respectively. And Will Levis, on the other hand, has been sacked 34 times this season. Four sacks against Vanderbilt, six against Missouri, five against Northern Illinois. I mean, that's just a massive, ridiculous number of sacks, a number of times that Will Levis has been hit so far this season. And that's just a three-game sample size against three not very impressive opponents and three opponents that don't make you kind of shake in your boots about how scary that pass rush is. So I think this could potentially be a breakout game for the Georgia pass rush, and they're going to get a lot of pressure on Will Levis, and it's just going to be way too much for this Kentucky offense to try and keep up. So I'm going to take Georgia to cover the 22 and a half. I'm also looking at the Tennessee South Carolina game, another game where both of these teams are coming in drastically different states of the program. I mean, Tennessee fighting for a playoff spot, South Carolina been, you know, fairly abysmal all season long. And even in more recent history, Tennessee this past week boat raced Missouri 66-24. And on the other hand, South Carolina got boat raced themselves by Florida. So I'm going to take Tennessee also to cover that same spread. I have the same kind of feeling about this spread at Tennessee minus 22 and a half as I do with Georgia. That last, you know, point and a half, 2 point kick kind of makes me a little uncomfortable, but I still think between Georgia and Tennessee both, these both are good enough offenses to put up plenty of points, to have the ability to cover this spread. I mean, Tennessee is playing for its first 10-win season since 2007. This Tennessee team is playing for a college football playoff spot. Tennessee has everything on the line. This isn't a game that I think Tennessee is going to look past. This isn't a game that I don't think that Tennessee is going to approach, you know, with, you know, we can just kind of walk ourselves through this game because they know what's at stake here. And we know what to expect from Tennessee because Tennessee has proven to us nearly every single week this season, probably with the exception of that game against Georgia, that we can expect big chunk plays, we can expect a ton of points, we can expect a ton of yards. So the question remains, can South Carolina stop it? The defense is allowing 26-ish points a game, 386 yards per game. That's really not horrendous. And South Carolina is not bad against the pass. They're limiting quarterbacks to less than 200 yards per game on average so far this season. But where South Carolina's defense really kind of shows its weak spots is in the run game. They are allowing 192 yards per game on the ground alone. That ranks 113th in college football. I think that these Tennessee, first of all, the Tennessee passing game is more difficult to defend than any other team that South Carolina has faced this season. And I look at Jabari Small and I look at these Tennessee running backs that I think are going to have a big day against the South Carolina defense. And also, South Carolina hasn't been able to get to the quarterback all season long. They've only recorded 16 sacks in 10 games so far this season. That is at the bottom of the SEC, only better than Kentucky's 15 sack mark. So I'm taking Tennessee to cover the 22 and a half. I think that's kind of a gimme here, because while I say I'm a little bit nervous about Kirby calling the dogs off, no pun intended, again, I'm not worried about what that with Josh Heupel. We saw that last week whenever he put out Joe Milton and he put up the back out the backups, and he still said, "Hey, take it to the house." Even though we're up 59 to 20 something, take it to the house. Just keep putting it on him. And I have no problem with that. And I don't expect Josh Heupel to all of a sudden change that approach this week against South Carolina. So give me Tennessee and Georgia, both minus the 22 and a half. But coming up next, I'll get into the rest of my games of the week, plus some other games that you might want to check on in terms of a playoff picture. We'll get into that coming up next. Southeastern Carolines, I'm Caroline Fenton, 1025, 1063, the game. All right, let's get into it. The remainder of the SEC slate of the day, my picks. I'm looking at Florida, Vanderbilt. So Florida's coming off of a 38-6 win over South Carolina. Vanderbilt, on the other hand, round of applause for Clark Lee and this Vanderbilt football program getting their first SEC win since 2019 against Kentucky last week. And I was at the Tennessee-Missouri game last weekend. I was in Neyland Stadium and freezing my butt off. But they played highlights and they showed the final of the Kentucky Vanderbilt game, and the whole stadium erupted, the cheering. They were so, I don't know if it was more so a good for Vanderbilt moment or if it was more of a screw you Kentucky kind of moment. I think he probably leaned toward the latter, but it was a funny little moment. But Florida Vanderbilt, and right now, Florida is playing their best football of the season. Oh, aside from that Utah game at the beginning of the season, Florida has looked better the past couple of weeks, and they really have looked all season long, and they're starting to find a little bit of consistency. That's one critique that I had of this Florida team, was that it was hot and cold and up and down, and it really kind of depended on Anthony Richardson, because we have seen a tale of two Anthony Richardsons all season long. He can go out there one week, like he did against Tennessee, and throw for 400 plus yards, and then he can go out against Kentucky and, not be able to get anything moving, and he turns the ball over. But right now, we're starting to see some consistency from Florida, and specifically from this Florida offense. Because in three of their last four games, they put up 40 plus points. In that one game that they didn't, they scored 38, and that was against South Carolina last week. And Florida has not allowed an offensive touchdown in the last six quarters of play that they have played. South Carolina had one special teams touchdown last week, but they have not allowed an offensive touchdown in the last game and a half in which Florida has played, which is a testament to the Florida defense that we've seen kind of struggle all season long. But on the other hand, Vanderbilt has scored 40 points twice this season, and they haven't done it since week two against Elon. And this Vanderbilt offense is improving. This Vanderbilt offense is evolving. But Florida is just better. And I mean, this Florida run attack is going to be incredibly difficult for Vanderbilt to try and stop, because Florida has three players averaging 6 yards a carry. Anthony Richardson averaging 6.6 yards a carry, Trevor Etienne 6.37, and Montrell Johnson at that 6.12 mark. All three of those players rank in the top 10 of SEC rushing yards per carry. So this Florida run offense is no joke. This Vandy run defense, on the other hand, they're allowing almost 4.8 yards per rush. That's second to last among SEC teams. And I can only imagine that that average is only going to go up away from Vanderbilt's favor against this duo of backs and this trio of really talented runners on Florida's team. But like, even in Kentucky's loss to Vanderbilt, Chris Rodriguez still ran for 160 yards. And that just goes to show just how porous this Vanderbilt run defense truly can be. So I'm taking Florida minus 14. Good for Vanderbilt. I'm happy for Vanderbilt. I'm happy for Clark Lee. for getting that monkey off their back and finally getting that first SEC win in the Clark Lea era, the first SEC win in a few seasons. But I think that this Florida team is heating up at the right time, and that's bad news for Vanderbilt. Ole Miss, Arkansas, another interesting game today. It's one of the most puzzling questions of the season that I have is, why has Arkansas struggled so much when there was so much preseason hype for Sam Pittman and this Arkansas team as a whole? I mean, KJ Jefferson will be back and healthy against Ole Miss, which is a great sign for Arkansas, even though with their second and third string quarterbacks last week against LSU, they still were able to keep it a close game, came within a field goal, but they still, at that point, they only scored 10 points. And this Ole Miss defense is pretty solid. Arkansas's got a great defensive front, the best in the SEC. So it's going to be interesting to see how Quinshon Judkins and the rest of this Ole Miss run game kind of responds to this really, really stout Arkansas defensive front. But overall, you know, while the Arkansas front four and their linebackers might limit Ole Miss's run game, I still just don't think that Arkansas can generate enough points to beat Ole Miss. Even if they might limit Ole Miss and what they can do, it's just, I'm out on KJ Jefferson. I'm out on this Arkansas team. So I think the spread is really kind of in the bettor's favor here. I'm going to take Ole Miss minus the 2.5. But a few more games to keep an eye on in terms of the playoff picture. Number 7, USC is traveling to UCLA. That spread is minus 2.5, favors USC. That's going to be an interesting one to see if USC or even a Pac-12 representative will be in the college football playoff in the top four. Also, number 4, TCU, undefeated, you know, came out of Texas unscathed. They are on the road at Baylor. So keep an eye on those two games, as well as Utah at Oregon. Both those teams with 2 losses, I don't think, are in the running to be in the college football playoff, but at number 10 and number 12 in the country, it's going to be a really interesting matchup to watch. But that's going to do it for me today. Thank you to 312 Pizza Company for always being the best hosts every Saturday morning. It's one of my favorite places to hang out, and I love the fact that I get to do my show here every Saturday morning. They truly are the best, so come hang out at 312 Pizza Company, and I will see y'all next week.